spirit. I like that.
He has some questions for you.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Technology's great when it works.
Are you not going to be going like this this time?
No, but you're going to have to give it to me today.
Yeah, he's like, hurry up.
That was good.
That was so messed up.
Well, seeing how the ones who usually do the homework in here.
We'll get that out of the way. Wiener v. South Coast Child Care Centers, Inc.
IRAC. Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. IRAC. What's the issue?
The defendants owe a legal duty to protect children from the criminal acts of a third party.
Legal duty for criminal acts.
Oh! We actually already dealt with this issue! Did we not? So this should have been easy peasy. What is the rule?
A standard rule is that businesses are not they don't owe a duty unless the crime is foreseeable. They're ordinarily under no duty to care.
Enough. As a general rule, no one under any circumstance owes a duty to anyone unless, of course, there is a relationship. Employer-employee, husband to wife, doctor to patient. But in terms of businesses, they do owe duties to the people who enter the land for the purposes that it's held open. But does that duty encompass the acts of third parties? Well, we know. Maybe. It depends on one simple word. Foreseeability. Which means what? What does foreseeability mean?
The likelihood of an outcome.
Likelihood of an outcome. Remember, we are dealing with the reasonable person standard. It's not what you think might happen. It's what an average, everyday person would think. And if a reasonable person would think, yeah, it could happen, then a business may owe a duty. Because don't forget, owners of land owe a duty of care and a duty to warn of known dangers. If there is a known danger, boom, there's your foreseeability. Questions? All right, here's a question. Would the college owe you a duty to prevent you from being hit by a car as you crossed over that half-assed crosswalk section to get up into this upper lot? The college owe a duty to warn you of known dangers. Why? One, that's the way they're forcing you to go. And two?
It's their property.
It's their property. And three? What usually happens if a car and a person are in the same literal spot at the same time?
The person doesn't make it out well.
The person usually is probably not going to be doing any sprints anytime soon, right? So, is the type of harm that could happen if a student and car go Is that foreseeable? It's a pain in the ass getting around Craig campus. Since they redesigned it back in the... God, when did they change? You used to be able to drive right up the hill.
Yes.
Yeah. And then they changed it. Man, I don't know, maybe this is about 15 years ago. Oh, too many people were getting harmed. They had, because you had to punch it to go up the hill. And then they made the big donut. That's even worse. So, just problematic. But anyways, it is reasonably foreseeable because so many cars go that way, so many people go that way.
Why they did it, because people used to take the shortcut.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I would like to do is I would like to see them invest some money and make like a bridge or a tunnel. So that way you don't have to stop. But anyways, we'll see what they do. All right, so foreseeable. Now, would the college owe you a duty to warn you or to protect you from the likelihood of your skull being crushed by a meteorite? Why?
It's not foreseeable.
Not foreseeable. All right, so there we go. We got the extremes. One, there is foreseeability. Duty to warn, they have the yellow signs. Duty of care, they put the crosswalks in, the police monitor it. Versus meteor strike. What happened here in this case? Wow, what was he trying to do? Like a reverse form of Frogger?
No, he was actually trying to kill them.
He was actually trying to kill. Oh man. So I need some more facts to make sense of this.
The playground had a 4-foot chain link fence, and then Stephen Abrams intentionally drove his car through the fence, killing 2 children and injuring others. The plaintiff sues. The Children's Center and the Church for Negligence claiming the fence was inadequate. Defendants argued the attack was unforeseeable and met safety codes. That's...
Definitely went to high school. Not. Alright, so you got a T-bone intersection, right? And cars normally come out and they go left or they go right, but straight across, sidewalk, little lip, fence, kiddos behind. What is the purpose of the fence?
Protect your kids.
How?
To
contain the children. Because what do children have the likelihood of doing?
Wandering.
Because kids are kids. So the purpose of the fence is to corral the kids. Does a 4-foot chain link fence fulfill that duty? How many little toddlers do you know? Preschool age, have the ability to climb over 4-foot chain link fences. Heck, I probably couldn't do it until I was a teenager. No, I'm kidding. All right. So what they have is proper for the type of business that they do. But do chain link fences have the structural integrity to stop? Why not?
They're not made for automobiles.
They're not made for automobiles. Very true. They're made for corralling things. Putting your dog in, keep the kids in, letting your neighbors know what's yours and not. Oh, putting around a pool. So there's no attractive nuisance. But they're not designed to stop cars. Question. Well, if the church parking lot where the daycare center was across the street from a T-bone intersection, why didn't they put a better, bigger fence in? Why didn't they put a bigger fence in?
Because that never happened before in that area. Stoppers.
They do not have a duty to do anything more than what is foreseeable. They put the fence in, because it's foreseeable that the kiddos could run away. They don't have a duty, however, to make anything stronger because a car never drove straight at the fence, accelerated, went up over the curb, up through the fence, and aimed at little children. How frequent is that? What, we don't hear about it every single day in the news? No, we don't. So that begs the question. Should the child care center or the church be financially liable for the acts, the criminal acts of that driver?
No.
Why? Oh, so he definitely committed a crime. Now, should he be liable for what he did?
Yes.
Absolutely. He was charged. He was, you know, brought to prison. He was found guilty. Vehicular homicide. But should the church owe compensation to these poor kids' families?
No.
Is it sad?
Yes.
But is there a legal duty owed?
No.
No, not at all. How did the court decide?
Because this is a full case. I gave you the court's opinion. What did the court say?
They found the church not liable.
Why?
Because the burden of requiring the landlord to protect against crime everywhere is too great.
Think about that. If businesses would be required to protect visitors to their land for every possible scenario that could occur, because human beings have crazy imaginations, could a business afford to be in business? Do you think you would be here right now if the college had to design these buildings to be meteor proof, to be nuclear bomb proof, to be earthquake proof? No, you would put too much of a burden upon businesses. They could not operate. That would be unreasonable. And all it would be do is force them to waste money on things that likely will never occur. So therefore, the courts will only do what is reasonable and what is foreseeable. Any questions on that? There was only two cases in that packet, right? Pass them in.
Please.
Could it not happen again?
Yeah.
So maybe that does add to foreseeability. Does it not? Okay, so then why are you backing down? Make your argument.
The church knew that a car rolled through the fence before, and they just put back up the same fence.
What were the facts underlying when the mail truck went through?
Fell out and the truck rolled through a fence, but it still went through the fence easily.
Okay, well, obviously, a vehicle is going to go through the fence. But how often do you think guys randomly fall out of mail trucks?
Not that often.
No, probably not that often. I've had my mail delivered at my house for, God, I think I've owned my house for 30, no, wait. I'm going to be married 30 years this year, so I've had my house 29 years. 29 years. I never once saw the postman's truck go by all by itself, the postman running after it, going, ah!
Yeah, but isn't it foreseeable that at a busy intersection...
Had it happened before, other than that one freak accident?
I mean, the mail truck was a freak accident.
Right. But did the mail truck, if I remember correctly, it kind of did, like, one of these. It didn't, like, accelerate and go all the way through the parking lot. So I'm sure the court weighed it.
Yeah.
Now, what would happen if there were other instances besides the mail truck? Three times in a year, four times in a year. You think that might have added to foreseeability?
Definitely.
Right. But I think in this instance, that was just so random that, again, that doesn't necessarily add to the likelihood that of happening what exactly happened in this case. But again, you're free to disagree. Courts make shit up all the time.
So I have to kind of go on the opposition view of granted, this is totally just kind of foreshadowing. I think if you had a different type of fence there could conceivably be more people that were injured. Because a brick wall doesn't necessarily stop an accelerating car.
No. And a brick wall with a chain link fence at least kind of wraps around the car.
And there's room to, like, it kind of gives that buoyancy of stopping it. Whereas
with a brick wall, it's going to send bricks flying, yeah.
And there could have been conceivably more kids killed instead of the two that died.
That's true. And a brick wall is also way more expensive.
Yeah.
So again, what would happen to that in business? It might not be able to afford to do it, be in business. So, yeah, those again, like I told you, with this civil stuff, it's by a preponderance of the evidence. More likely than not, reasonability. It's not an exact science. It's not perfect. But again, it gets to the point where if we could get to the point where even 1 + 1/2, which would give a majority, kind of like, okay, kind of makes sense, that's as far as you need to go. That's as far as you need to go. You do not have to make it perfect every single time. Because that's life. You can't make life perfect. Other thoughts? Okay, take out a piece of paper and put your name on it. Quiz. I can't sing that quite as easy as I can say quiz. If I said quickie, that would not even be apropos either. So, quick quiz. I could get the old 1960s Batman theme song. Quick quiz. Thank you. Na 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 na. Quick quiz. Six words. That is all it's going to take to get a perfect score on this quiz. Six words. Check your laptops. I don't want to think you're cheating. Six words. What are the elements of negligence?
Kelly, she's on her way. She had a family emergency.
Okay.
Didn't ask her about it.
Okay. Six words.
Six.
Six words. Five elements, six words. Oh, shikes, I lost track of time.
I'll be fair.
30 seconds. Listen carefully, because you may get something similar on Monday. Duty, breach, proximate cause, foreseeability, harm. One more time. Duty, breach, foreseeability, proximate cause, harm. Not necessarily in that order. All right. Keys to negligence. We already understand what duty is. The second key is getting your head around proximate cause. Proximate cause is the nexus. It's the connection point. It's where the lines cross in the middle. In order to be liable for negligence, whatever the breach is, must be the cause of the harm. If it's not the cause of the harm, there is no liability. Why? Well, even if defendant was being a dumbass, it did something that could be a perceivable breach of a duty that was owed. If that breach didn't cause the harm, how can they be responsible? There must be that nexus. Because if not, the law will not impose penalties. Because we cannot be responsible for everything that happens to somebody else. So to a degree, this is the brake, the throttle, however you want to think about it. Anything that's going to basically narrow the consequences of our actions to the point where the consequences link to what we are responsible for. So what does that mean? Well, I am responsible for what happens to you in this classroom from 11 a.m. to 12:15 p.m. The moment you walk out of the door, you could get run over by the AV cart because they're switching out all the computers and the techie guys are driving around the hallways like crazy man. Does that have anything to do with me? No, not at all. Even if I am an awful person and I make a mess and I knock things over and I cause people's water bottles to fly over the place as I spaz out, me being irresponsible in here has nothing to do with what happens to you out in the hallway. So why should I be liable for that? My stupidity didn't cause your harm.
Makes sense.
But how do you know? Because negligence is not clear cut. How do you know? Well, The law tells us the easiest way to determine if proximate cause is present is to utilize what's referred to as the but-for test.
The but-for test. Meaning, but for the actions of defendant, would plaintiff have been injured? But for the actions of defendant, would the plaintiff have been injured? Okay, here's a hypothetical. Plaintiff was involved in a nighttime auto accident. Defendant, who hit plaintiff's vehicle with his own, worked late at the office.
Worked late. Worked a triple shift. 24 hours straight.
If the defendant hadn't worked that third shift, would they have been in the area of the accident? No, where would they have been? Somewhere else.
But here's the question.
Could plaintiff sue defendant's place of work for making defendant work that third shift? No, why not?
Yeah, is the fact that defendant worked the actual cause of the accident? Might it have contributed? Maybe. But you never know. What did I not tell you in the facts? Oh, the defendant actually was a firefighter. And yeah, they're on duty for 24 hours, but you know what firefighters do when they work a 24-hour shift?
Sleep.
They sleep. So defendant actually got the same amount of sleep they would have if they were at home. So in that scenario, no, you cannot say that defendant's place of work is responsible. The defendant's actions are, should have been paying attention when they were driving. Or if they were too sleepy, they should not have gotten in their car. But the fact that defendant worked the third shift does not make the company liable.
Why? The boundaries. The limitations.
So in this instance, but for would ensure defendant is liable, but for would essentially eliminate liability for the company.
Make sense? Let's think about the car care.
I mean the daycare stuff. But for defendant's criminal intent to squish little kids, would the little kids have gotten killed? No, but for the way he was driving, but for the way his actions, his intent, that created the harm. But did the business, are they responsible? Did they control that driver in any way, shape, or form? So but for would exonerate child care company.
Oh! Where's this one? Oh, I forgot about this one. Oh, here we go. I got a good one. Defendant drives his car carelessly and smashes into another car that happened to be loaded with dynamite, which explodes. But 10 blocks away, a nurse in a neonatal center, startled by the explosion, drops a teeny weeny infant. Is the harm suffered by the infant, or does the driver of the original car, rather, are they responsible for the harm that caused the teeny wee little infant?
car explodes, driver, driving negligently, smashes the vehicle, loaded with dynamite, blows up, 10 blocks away, nurse hears the boom, boom, drops baby.
Boom.
Can the baby's family sue the driver?
Why? How often do cars drive down roads laden with dynamite?
Not
often. Right, and you know how far 10 blocks away is?
Pretty far. One would think that a nurse working in a neonatal center would have steadier hands.
So yeah, it's too far. It's too far removed. Too far removed. It's unlikely that a court would find the driver liable for the injury to the infant. Now the nurse, on the other hand, but for her clumsy hands, would the child be safe? There you go. So the nurse could be held liable, but not the driver. Too far removed. Too many factors in between. Questions? Here's another area of interest. What happens if multiple people are involved in doing tortious acts that could result in harm? Because after all, you do realize it's more than possible that multiple people could be responsible for injuries that you suffer if the acts are concurrent. Here's a hypothetical for you. You go into a restaurant because you're hungry.
You did not have breakfast. So your tummy is rumbling. So you bail out of here at 12:15. You zip down to Baja's. Is that place even open? I don't even know if people even go there.
Oh,
is it? All right. So you're in Baja's, and you have, what can you get over there? All right, so you're getting a taco. Can you get tacos over there?
Yeah.
All right, or a quesadilla or something like that. Burrito. All right, so you're sitting there, you're schmuck. You know, this is so good, you're just loving life. And then suddenly, you ingest poison because the cook inadvertently switched the seasoning with rat poisoning. And just as the moment your stomachs begin to rot and your heart is about to stop pounding, a random tough gangbanger drives by and pops a cap in your ass. Bullet strikes you the moment your heart stops from the poison. Who killed you?
It depends what the autopsy says.
Yeah. Simultaneous. Who is responsible? How many people say the chef who poisoned you? How many people say the shooter? How many people say both?
Truth be told, both are responsible.
Because both of their actions are the proximate cause of your death. Because you cannot separate them. You're dead either way. And the fact that it happened simultaneously doesn't make one party less liable than the other.
Chef, negligent. Didn't look at the ingredients.
Gangbanger, negligent. Not allowed to do random drive-by Bajas. College students go down there to get burritos. I may try it someday.
Questions?
On that one?
Yes.
I still question whether it would
both literally happened simultaneously.
Right.
The last heartbeat happened the moment the heart went.
So that's the question of, like, for medically, it's like, what time did they calculate the heart stopping versus the time being the shot?
The exact same instant.
The
It's not going to be that way.
In my hypothetical world, it
is. Hypothetical world, it's not that way, but in the
medical
fine. World, you're going to do it. Right.
You're going to do that to me? All right, fine. You, Heidi, you decide you want to go to Baja's. And as you're walking across the crosswalk, right?
Yeah.
Two cars come at you from either side. And dude, you remember the Malachi Crunch?
No.
Happy Days?
Okay.
Malachi Crunch?
Okay.
Fonzie was doing Demolition Derby, and they were the Malachi brothers, and they did the Malachi Crunch. So Heidi gets Malachi Crunch. Two cars, smash! With her in the middle. Very uncomfortable Heidi sandwich. Who's responsible?
That's where they both are, because that's an accident that you're that extra piece in the middle.
Same with my other hypothetical. Both happened at the same time. All right. Keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. The law must place the blame on somebody. But if two scenarios happen at the same time and it's impossible to separate the two, both will be liable. But if there is a degree where one is a little more liable than the other, it doesn't necessarily mitigate the person who is less responsible for the harm. Because what the court will do is when they award damages, they'll award damages in proportion to what you contributed. So here we go. Contractor installs stairs at your house, didn't install the stairs correctly, but the stairs had a defect when it shipped out of the factory. You decide to use your newly installed stairs, and before you know it, you're down in the basement looking up. Who's responsible? Who's responsible? Well, in this instance, both would be responsible, but who touched the stairs last? So the court would find the contractor a little more responsible than the stair manufacturer, but neither could be free. Because if the stairs were put in right, you may not have ended up in the basement.
So if it's a known thing after the fact, so example, they put the stairs in, then 2 days later they found out that there's this defect.
Don't forget, you can add parties in. We talked about that for the first exam. You can bring in other parties after the fact, during the pleading stage.
So like if it's that, then would it weigh differently? Would it weigh, if the weight change?
Both would be sued, but again, the proportional awarding of the damages, that would be weighed at the end. All right, we got one more. You go home, but you rent an apartment. Terms of the lease. Your landlord is responsible for all repairs. Okay? That's in your lease. If there's something defective at your apartment, your landlord's going to take care of it. But you, one day, acting like clueless, playing on your phone, trying to beat that Candy Crush level, walks, slips, and falls, tears your cartilage in your knee. Why? Well, on a windy day, you're sitting there and you open your screen door. And a huge gust of wind blows. So hard, it snaps the chain, and then it blows back and slams into you, pushing you over the threshold, which caused you to catch your foot caught and end down and blow your knee out. Who's liable? Why not?
Because it wasn't broken before, and
something that didn't break before, but just in the moment. Like, it was unexpected.
Unexpected, act of God. No liability for landlord. Same basic facts. Same basic facts. But plaintiff during trial claims there was in fact no safety chain, no piston, nothing to stop the door from slamming.
So why didn't he tell the landlord beforehand?
He's too busy playing Candy Crush. Is the landlord responsible? Why not? What's missing?
He didn't know that there was something missing.
So if we didn't know something was missing, there is no foreseeability. Okay, very good. Last variation. Tenant is a pain in the ass. Constantly complaining about everything. The way the dust accumulates in the corners of the apartment. The way when the wind's blowing, there's a weird hum that occurs. But among the many complaints was the mention, the fact that the door slams hard. Go back to the windy day. Is landlord responsible? Is landlord liable?
If there was a prior complaint to say that the door slams hard, then yes.
Landlord knew. Landlord is responsible. The fact that God, or whatever you believe in, pushed the door hard on one given moment, that does not eliminate landlord's liability, because landlord knew, and under the terms of the lease, he said he would fix all repairs. All right, very good. Very good. Oh, Malachi Crunch. Those old stairs. Acts of God. All right. Questions? Put those in there so I can keep track of things. All right, here we go. Duty, breach, proximate cause, foreseeability, harm. That is negligence. What happens if something occurs that looks like negligence, feels like negligence, maybe even smells like negligence? But you don't know who's responsible. Well, interestingly enough, there are areas in the law that allow for potential liability for what the law refers to as negligent-like situations. One of the most common is one of the few phrases in Latin that I want you to know, at least this for the next test. Res ipsa loquitur. Res ipsa loquitur, which is Latin for the thing speaks for itself. This is a doctrine of law where defendant can be presumed to be negligent if they have exclusive control over what caused the harm. So maybe there's no proof of actual negligence. You can't show duty, breach, proximate cause, foreseeability, harm. But yet someone was still harmed by something that one person has exclusive control over. Meaning you can't prove that the person did something wrong, but the only way to get harmed by what harmed you was something that no one else could interfere with. That's where res ipsa loquitur comes into play. Let's say Quinsig Community College decides to hire a contractor to repair the brick facing on this lovely building. Contractor comes in, puts the safety fences around, but allows for entrance to the building.
safe entry. But in order for their workers to do the bricks, a giant crane comes in on a Saturday and lifts up a big pallet of bricks and puts it up on the roof. The only people who can get up onto the roof are contractors' employees. Why? Because Quinsig decides to give exclusive control over the keys to get up on the roof to the contractors. So no one else could go up there and cause shenanigans. But one day you decide to come to class because it's Monday. And you want to get to Lemanic's class because you may have a quiz on Monday. And as you walk into the building, a brick, two bricks, 12 bricks, a whole bunch of bricks, suddenly falls off the rooftop and crushes your skull. Can your estate sue the contractor? And are they going to be liable? Why not?
Because he wasn't being negligent. He just was doing his job.
How do you know?
Because I didn't get any other information that he did it. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. We don't know. All we know is that there's a pile of bricks, a whole pallet of bricks, up on the roof, and the only ones who can get up there are the contractors.
I think he's negligent because if the contractors are the only ones up there, they probably didn't like security.
Prove proximate cause.
That they were the only ones up there?
That's the only thing you know, that the only ones that are up there.
Yeah, so it means that they didn't secure it.
Can you prove that they didn't secure it?
I mean, well, the bricks are falling, so it must mean that's not security.
You don't know what happened. All you know is that the bricks fell.
Windy.
Have you ever messed with a pallet of bricks? Okay, I'm going to put
whatever's holding it up.
I'm going to put a challenge to you. All right. Oh, on Saturday, I want you to go to Home Depot. All right, and go to where the bricks are, and I want you to try to push over a stack of bricks that are all arranged on a pallet. I want you to try to do that. I didn't say it wasn't stable. I mean, you think the crane company is not going to make sure that when they put it down there? Because they could be responsible if they don't put it on a stable place. But I didn't say that. They rested it. We cannot prove it, can we? Because the company could turn around and say, act of God. It was just the wind. Well, is that right? You just had 30-something bricks make your head size go from a 7.5 down to about a 1/4 inch. It's not right that the contractor, because you can't prove negligence. You have no evidence to prove there's negligence. Well, that's where this comes in. Who had complete control over the pallets? Just the contractor. That's all you need to show. No one else could get up there. No one else could do anything. You don't have to prove that they did something wrong. All you need to be able to show is that they had exclusive control. Because there's no way else anyone else could have been responsible. Res ipsa loquitur. All right, here you go. Here's another one. Any of you want to be a nurse? Maybe involved in the nursing program? All right, let's say you go into surgery, and while you are under anesthetic, you suffer complete nerve damage in your arm. Although, there was nothing in the surgical procedure that you were undertaking that had anything to do with your arm. You were getting your appendix out.
Now, here's the thing. You're knocked out. You have no idea who's in the room, but it turns out there are about a dozen people, medical people, in the room.
Who's negligent?
Who caused your injury?
You throw these weird ones out there, and I'm like, how the hell did somebody get nerve damage in their arm when you're talking about an appendix?
Exactly. How are you going to prove it? It had nothing to do with the other.
You can't, but you're under the care of a doctor, and that's what it is.
Who had exclusive control over you? You're not going to win for negligence. You cannot prove proximate cause. You cannot prove that they did something that was the cause of your nerve damage. All you can prove is that your arm worked fine before you went under. And when you came out, while those 12 people were looking over your body as you're like passed out on the gurney, they had exclusive control over your body. Something went wrong. Much of medical malpractice is based upon res ipsa loquitur. Someone did something to you. Don't need to necessarily show what it was. All you need to show was that they had control over you. So, how do we establish res ipsa loquitur? One, there's an inference of negligence. Looks like negligence. Sounds like negligence. But you're not 100% sure that it was negligence. And two, defendant had exclusive control over what happened to plaintiff. And three, this is the third element. Plaintiff did nothing to contribute to the harm. There was no contributory negligence. Then in that scenario, you could establish a claim not for negligence, but you could put forward a claim for res ipsa loquitur. So, you get in the elevator, and the elevator plummets to the ground floor. You go to Walmart. You pick up a nice six-pack of Coca-Cola. You crack open the bottle, because Coke in glass bottles are better than cans. And just as you're about to take a big sip, you see a dead mouse floating in the bottle. You are at Baja's.
No.
And a taxi,
okay,
unoccupied, goes careening through the plate window. Those would all be scenarios where you could not actually prove negligence. Who put the damn mouse in the bottle? Where the hell did the car come from?
So the mouse in the bottle, when you go to the bottling, go after the bottling?
Yeah, but who put it there?
Well, that's why you go after the bottle.
But who did it?
They're held liable for it, I would think, because it's their product.
Who did it, though? And who's to say that it was done at the bottling plant? Who's to say that Walmart employee couldn't have done it? On a bottle? You can crimp it back down.
No, you can't.
Yeah, you just can.
No, you can't.
Yes, you can. I didn't say this. The screw tops. The glass bottles.
Even those, the pop-off ones, you can't put those back.
You don't. You've never seen that. You can buy a crimper on Amazon for like 30 cents. In years past, I made home beer.
That's way too much into it.
Well, I'm just saying, you never know.
No, you do.
No, you really don't.
Most people get, They tried to get away.
You could have a Walmart clerk who is sick and tired of stocking the shelves with freaking Coke, and he decides to cause some shenanigans because he's evil.
Well, it's not. I'll be honest with you because I know the truth on this. It's not. It's Coke that goes in and does it. So it's not a Walmart clerk. It's a Coke person.
You stop spoiling my hypotheticals with reality.
Sorry, I know the reality of it just because my husband's a vendor. So
I know.
You know if it's chips. I know it too, so.
All right, that's fine. All right. Ooh, let me see. Yeah, I'm not going to give any other examples. Does that make sense? Any other questions? The Resip Sloper. All right, here's another situation that is negligent-like. And that involves what is known as strict liability. Strict liability. Strict liability is negligent-like, but it's not negligence. You do not need to prove duty, breach, proximate cause, foreseeability, harm. But rather, strict liability is in place where the law imposes an absolute liability. So there is a statute that literally says, if A happens, B is liable. When does this occur? Well, when someone is injured by certain dangerous instrumentalities. Dangerous instrumentalities. Poisons, explosives, airplanes, vicious animals. Oh, you guys are way too young. Most of you are way too young. But maybe my older students. Remember when that woman was down in Connecticut and she went over her friend's house and the friend had an orangutan and it ripped her face off? How do you remember that? Was that like 20 years ago?
No.
Was that long ago? I don't know. I get older and it seems like everything happened like decades ago.
2010.
All right. So maybe you do. Yeah. So that woman, the owner of the orangutan, is liable under strict liability. Because orangutans, lions, tigers, bears, oh my, are not domesticated animals. And heck, there are even some breeds of domestic animals that if you own, you will be strictly liable for anything that animal does. I think Massachusetts is one of the states that says if you own a pit bull, you will be held. Doesn't matter if you meant to do it or not. If your pit bull bites the face off of somebody, you are going to be fully liable under the theory of strict liability. Don't have to prove duty, breach, proximate cause, foreseeability, harm. Just, did you have the instrumentality? Did the instrumentality cause harm? You're responsible. Boom. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if the duty of care was fulfilled or not. All it boils down to is whether or not the instrumentality caused the harm. Oop, I thought there was one more. So, you are driving down the road, and about a quarter mile up the road, they're doing some road widening, and there's a contractor that's been brought in to do some blasting. And as you're sitting there waiting for the police to kind of let the traffic go forward, you feel the real briefly, and the next thing you know, a big chunk of rock goes bam right through the hood of your car, causing your engine to seize, the pistons go blasting out of the chassis, through the hood, into the passenger compartment, and embed themselves right into your chest.
was the contractor acting negligently with the explosives? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Contractor will be held liable for all the damage that is reasonably linked to what they were doing. True story. I won't give you a goofy hypothetical. So in Sutton, where I am the chairman of the Board of Selectmen, there is a construction site at a former gravel pit that was bought by an international company. And they did a lot of blasting work to basically level it because it was an old sand pit. And in the blasting, some of the abutters suffered damage to their house. Well, here's the thing. Under state law, all of the rules and regulations were followed. And the contractor for the explosive company intentionally did half of what is the maximum charge allowed at the blasts. So meaning they could have been twice as big as they were. But yet, three of the abutters suffered damage to their houses. There was no investigation in terms of whether or not the contractor did something negligent. But they were within the reasonable zone where vibrations were enough and the contractor ultimately had to pay for the home repairs. We did have one resident that was a mile and a half away claim, oh, they had cracks in their ceilings after the blasting. They didn't get a single penny. Because they had no proof that the cracks were not there beforehand. And two, that's too far away. Way out of the foreseeable zone of danger. One was within the zone, strictly liable. Didn't matter whether they did something right or wrong. One was outside of the zone. No liability. Yes?
So you said if you own a pit bull, you're liable for all, everything you've done?
Yep, 100%. And I think the last time they revised it, I think you could also be held criminally liable as well.
Well, what if your pit bull's in your backyard where it's fully fenced in, you can't leave, but someone trespasses in there, and then your pit bull hurts that, bites his hand off?
You have the duty to take care of that animal, and the fact that they trespass doesn't matter.
Really?
Isn't it hard to get this home insurance if you have a pit bull?
Yeah, that's true. There's definitely,
Dalmatians are on there.
There are certain breeds that are problematic.
There's breeds that are if you have that, you have different insurance or they won't give you insurance at all.
Right.
A question on liability.
Yeah.
This is a real example, and it just happened recently. In Otter, on South Bridge Street, there was a gas delivery. The person delivered diesel gas into the premium tank, which then caused these people...
That happens all the time. I hear about that a lot.
It's
scary.
This was big. There was a lot of cars that went in. And so the liability, would that fall to the gas deliverer, or would it fall on to the gas station?
It depends. Are there anything in the gas station's procedures that require them to actually go out and check before it's installed? If they have that procedure, then the gas station would be liable. If not, if the deliverer company is allowed to just pump, then it's going to be upon them.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like the gas station, I was the one who handled all the claims and took care of all the cars that were there from a set time between a certain time.
Well, that's probably the right thing to do. Because obviously, if you are a business, you want to take care of your customers. But yeah, that happened out on 146, too. At the mobile out there, one of the mobiles out there. Gotta be careful. All right, real quick. All right, so we have this allegation of negligence, duty breach, proximate cause, foreseeability, harm. Does defendant have any potential defenses? Interestingly enough, yes, they do. Yes, they do. One of the most significant defenses to negligence is what's referred to as
Contributory negligence.
Contributory negligence. If plaintiff is successful in proving defendant acted negligently, and that the negligent acts is the proximate cause of the harm. If defendant can show plaintiff contributed to the harm, defendant may have no liability. Now there's a catch. There's a catch. It depends upon which state you are in. Because there are, in fact, two types of the defense known as contributory negligence. And this is where I'm going to confuse the crap out of some of you. And I apologize, but there's no other way to explain it than what is based in the facts. The first type of contributory negligence is literally called contributory negligence. Contributory negligence. In contributory negligence states, by the way, there are five states plus Washington, D.C. that this defense is allowed. If defendant can prove plaintiff contributed even 1% to what happened to them, defendant is not liable. In contributory negligence states, five states plus DC, if defendant can prove plaintiff did even one tiny little thing that contributed to the harm, they're not going to be liable. Alabama, Maryland, North Carolina, Virginia, Indiana, in the District of Columbia. So what does this mean? Well, here is another awesome hypothetical from the devious mind of your esteemed professor. You go up to the curb because you want to go to Baja's again. That's going to be the hypothetical theme of the day. And you enter the crosswalk, but your shoe's untied. So you step forward, you bring your other foot forward, somehow your right foot gets tangled up into the shoelace of the left, and you trip into a face plant. The moment you hit the ground, Clueless, who's texting and driving, comes and uses you as a human speedboat. In a contributory negligent state, Clueless is not liable. Why? Your shoes weren't tied. And whose fault is that? If your shoes weren't tied, you wouldn't have been in the crosswalk. Bless you. That's wicked harsh. That is wicked harsh. That's the reason why it's only in a minority of states. The majority of states use what's called comparative negligence. Comparative negligence. So, plaintiff contributes a little bit, defendant contributes a little bit. What the court will do is they literally will compare how each party contributed to the harm, and they will weigh it. If defendant is more responsible than plaintiff, defendant will be held liable. But the damages will be reduced in proportion to the liability. I'll say all that again. In a comparative negligence state, the negligence of plaintiff and defendant are weighed. If defendant is more liable than plaintiff, defendant will be held liable, but the damages are reduced in proportion to the liability. So,
So Massachusetts is a comparative negligence state.
Same hypothetical. You are a human speed bump for clues. Were you negligent? Yes, you were. But would you have ended up dead solely on the basis of your own negligence? Probably not. Is Clueless, who is texting and driving, more responsible for your death than you are? 100%. But you contributed a little bit. Just happens that Clueless contributed more. So what the jury will do is they would actually determine what percentage you are responsible for your own harm. That situation, maybe 25%, maybe 20, maybe 15, I don't know what a jury would do. But ultimately, Clueless is only going to be responsible for his portion. Questions? Last one. Then we're going to go. Assumption of risk. Assumption of risk. If you put yourself in a situation where you place your life at risk, that is a defense for the defendant. There are two types. There is express assumption of risk, and there is implied assumption of risk. Express assumption of risk is where plaintiff says in advance, I understand the dangers and I'm going to do it anyways. So let's say you are going to borrow one of your buddy's motorcycles. You got a motorcycle permit, but not a motorcycle license. You've taken a couple of motorcycle lessons, but you haven't logged hundreds of miles on the open road. You borrow your buddy's motorcycle, and you drive it into a ditch, breaking both of your legs and both of your arms. One of your legs is broken so bad, it gets gangrened, and they have to cut it off. Is your buddy responsible for what happened to you? No, you assume the risk. You were not properly trained up. You should not have been on the motorcycle. So it's not your buddy's fault. Implied is where plaintiff voluntarily enters the area of risk, knowing that defendant is not obligated to protect them. But they don't say expressly, okay. So, you decide to go down to a racetrack. And you decide you want to watch the races from the middle of the track. But you get there after the race started. You decide you're going to walk across the track anyways. Is it the defendant's fault? As he was coming around the corner at 175 miles an hour, that went creating off his hood. No, you knew that going to the races was dangerous. You knew that going into the track was dangerous, but you decided to do it anyways. All right. There is another homework. It's the last one dealing with negligence. It actually covers strict liability. I think there's a comparative negligence case. And I think there is assumption of risk. Please have that ready for next week. Also next week, we're going to deal with agency, and that's going to be the last unit for the next exam, which will probably be next weekend. Just giving you the heads up. And lastly, there will be a quiz on Monday, maybe on something we covered today.